Blog Talk Radio.
Well, despite all of the scandals and the investigations and the self-righteous demands that Trump leave office and what a failure he is, the GOP just won again in a gigantic race in Georgia. John Ossoff defeated. John Ossoff, who, when he gives a speech, sounds exactly like Barack Obama for some weird reason. Defeated by Karen Hondell. Check it out.
Handle defeating Democrat John Ossoff 52-48% in Georgia's special election. It was the most expensive House race in history, with both campaigns and outside groups combining to spend about $50 million.
To the John Ossoff supporters, know that my commitments, they extend to every one of you as well. We may have some different beliefs, but we are part of one community, the community of the 6th District.
President Trump tweeting last night, quote, congratulations to Karen Handel on her big win in Georgia 6th. Fantastic job. We are all very proud of you.
Ossoff is a 30-year-old former congressional staffer and documentary filmmaker, not able to recover from backlash over not actually being a resident of the district.
We showed them that we can still build coalitions of people who may not see eye to eye on everything, but rather than demonizing each other, we find common ground to move forward. And that's the only way this country will move forward.
This was another loss for the Democratic Party, the fourth straight defeat this year in attempts to win a Republican seat. Democrats had lost special elections in Montana and in Kansas, and earlier yesterday, Republican Ralph Norman held off Democrat Archie Parnell in South Carolina. Democrats need to win 24 GOP House seats in next year's midterms to retake control of the House.
Yeah, the fallout, of course, from that race last night is going to continue.
Well, and so the hill just got a little bit for the Democrats, but, you know, you have to wonder with what's in the air now, if the Democrats cannot go and win a race like this, in which Trump has been trashed up and down from one end to the media to the next, when can they win a race? When can they get power back? And here is a little story connected to that. Yeah, for some reason my computer's a little bit slow, but I'm just wondering, could it be heat related? I'm sitting here in the studio sweating, and it's six in the morning. You know, so just have to wonder. But you know, the weird thing is it's hotter than I can remember, but I don't hear anybody talking. What's gone wrong here? I don't hear anybody talking about global warming. Maybe it's too hot for even global warming fanatics to pipe up. But the article that I was looking for from Polizet website, Dems suddenly worry Trump impeachment could backfire. Al Franken publicly frets what left-winger writers have been warning about for weeks. President Pence and the replacement for Trump, as incredible as it would seem, would still not be defeated 2016 contender Hillary Clinton or another progressive. It would be Pence. And Pence is more conservative than Donald Trump is by quite a wide margin. So, you know, here's a guy, he doesn't support really gay rights. He supports the law. He is a lawyer who had a talk show. So he's very good in the media. He's got a real sense of timing when he talks and everything. But if the Democrats were able to kill Trump, what happens next? And I mean, what happens next is you could be electing the next Ronald Reagan, whereas I don't hear anybody calling Trump Reagan. Trump's just been amazingly effective behind the sidelines, behind the curtain. With all the stuff going on in front, so I've got a little bit more here for you, and I've got Larry Sabato, who's the University of Virginia pollster and also a political commentator and a professor, and he's saying the euphoria is gone for Democrats and replaced with reality and depression. We talked about this yesterday, a movement. Well, and Frankie said he was going to call in today, but a movement in which there is no historical support for the ideas, in which the ideas are shown to be extraordinarily destructive. And the claims of the ideas don't exist. And you've got these people that are falling. Basically, how I see it is that they've been exposed on a national level, and there's no state level support for the Democrats. So for them to get back into power, they have to reinvent themselves somehow, right? Here is the depression, though.
Republicans are very, very happy with this win. John King for us at the Magic Wall. John, I want you to stand by as well, because I'm going to bring in now Larry Sabato, the director of the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia. Larry, welcome to the program. The bigger picture in Georgia, what is the bigger picture in this race? What can you tell us about what the voters were looking for here?
Well, the bigger picture to me is that the 2018 congressional elections are a year and a half away, and a million things can happen that can change the picture. But for Democrats, obviously, it's pretty depressing. That's the word I've seen on Twitter more than any other from Democrats about the result. I think if Democrats learn a lesson from this election, it's that the euphoria that they felt for the last several months as Donald Trump has fallen in the polls, and they began to believe that this would be not easy, but doable to take over the House of Representatives and eventually replace Donald Trump. That euphoria is gone, and it's replaced with reality. And the reality is it's going to be a long twilight struggle, day in and day out, if they're going to be able to retake the House and eventually defeat Donald Trump. It won't be easy. It may not be possible, but it certainly won't be easy.
I want to ask you this, because you as you mentioned that, this is from Massachusetts 6th District, and you probably know him as Democratic Congressman Seth Mouton. Mouton, he says, hashtag OSOP, a race better be a wake-up call for Democrats. Business as usual isn't working. Time to stop rehashing 2016 and talk about the future. He added, we need a genuinely new message, a serious jobs plan that reaches all Americans, and a bigger tent, not a smaller one. Focus on the future. What do you think of that, Larry?
Clearly, Democrats didn't do that in 2016. It's one of the reasons why they lost non-college blue-collar workers, and therefore lost Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan. But that's one side of it. The other side of it is to recognize the reality in this incredibly polarized era. Donald Trump has polarized things even further, if that were possible. When that happens, in the end, the vast majority of voters return to their party. They do it sooner or later. And
You know, like a lot of these people, Larry Sabato, even though he's an academic, even though he's supposed to be unbiased, is he's a leftist, so I've seen leftism in his commentary. But well, let's take a break here and do some local, well, do some of our support, our financial support, our ads. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and you're listening to AM Las Cruces. Little James Booker this weekend, the great genius of New Orleans. Hole in the wall.
Window the.
Oops. Always seems to be something playing in the background. Be that as it may, we will be right back. All right, so we had talked before about The Golden Bough, which is the great work on paganism that was written by Sir James Frazer, and it came out, I believe, in 12 volumes, and it's been reduced to a two or one book summary. Very interesting. And one of the things that Frazer covers in there is the elements of magic and related to magic is magical thinking. What is magical thinking? Here's a little clip for you.
What is magical thinking?
Magical thinking is something that we all do. Those with addictions just do maybe a little bit more. Magical thinking is something that we evolve as children, and we look and we think about the world around us sort of in a magical way, not in a reality context. People, for example, who have gambling problems engage in a lot of magical thinking that the odds really aren't what they are, that magically they're going to make the big win this time. Magical thinking is very common to think that if I play this video game and I'm winning the war, that in some way that I have become a more powerful person, a more confident person, when it only has come about really in this virtual world.
And magical thinking is the idea that if all of this, all of these brilliant elites, these leftists, these socialists get together and hate on Trump, and because of their excellence, because of their spiritual worth, they go after him, or their purity of thought, whatever you want to describe it as, the forces of nature, the forces of the universe, or karma, really, it's really karma that I think that these people are trying to tap into, that is going to bring down Trump. And I personally don't see the connection, but, you know, they're just making fools out of themselves. All right, what's the political fallout of Karen Handel's win? Here's a little on that.
Side of only the only special election tonight, voters in South Carolina have elected Republican Ralph Norman over his Democrat challenger, Archie Parnell. Norman spoke to his supporters a short time ago.
Folks, the people of 5th District decided to send a loud message, and that they did today. I think that message is this. It's time to govern. It's time to get things done. It's time to go to work. With everybody pulling together, we can make this country as great as we can make it. We can make it a reality now, and I want to go to Washington, D.C. to make that a reality.
Norman fills the seat vacated by the president's budget director, Mick Mulvaney. Let's turn back to the Georgia special election now, get some analysis. Greg Bluestein is the political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's in Atlanta tonight. Shelby Holliday is politics reporter for the Wall Street Journal. She's in New York, and here in Washington, Chris Steyerwalt. Greg, I want to start with you. Surprised the results tonight? Did you see this closing in the last few days?
We saw a closing, but we didn't realize it would be this wide of a margin for Karen Handel. I mean, this looked much easier than it really seemed out there on the field. Every poll showed it razor thin, and it was not even close by the end of it. I mean, this was a 6-point margin where John Ossoff wasn't able to really improve on Hillary Clinton's margin in Georgia. So is this a situation where the polls are wrong again?
Well, now, wait a minute.
All right. Well, I'm just asking.
I'm just saying that the poll, we did see that the late polls showed, we don't care about the top line number as much as we care about the movement. And in the closing weeks, the movement for Karen Handel was clear. She was closing the gap. As the focus on this race came down to this being cast as make or break, do or die. If Republicans lose this, then their party will be exploded by nuclear bombs and cast into the abyss, and it will all be over for them and they'll die. Then Republicans said, well, I guess we better go vote. What Republicans really wanted, or what Democrats really wanted, was to try to sneak up on them like they did in South Carolina. Isn't it funny that the race that got $50 million poured into it, celebrity endorsements, robocalls, full freak out, was a much wider margin than the one that was in South Carolina that had half the number of voters and was significantly closer?
Shelby, what turns this race?
Well, you guys can debate about the polls all night. We can all debate about them. But this does resemble 2016 in a lot of different ways. The polls were a bit off. Ground game didn't matter as much as everyone thought it did. Money and enthusiasm did not ultimately turn into votes for Democrat John Ossoff. You know, some of it had to do with the fact that he's a 30-year-old political novice. He didn't have a record. There was a lot of talk in the district about what he really did stand for, despite the fact that he was running on this moderate, fiscally conservative platform. But I think Karen Handel going to Washington is not just a win for Karen Handel. It's a huge win for the White House, a big win for Paul Ryan. And in Karen Handel, Republicans now have yet another House member who is fiscally conservative, who shares their conservative social values, also wants to build a wall on the southern border. She wants to repeal and replace Obamacare. I spoke to her last week when I was in Georgia. She said she does not necessarily support the border adjustment tax, which is the subject of much debate in the House, but she is she is firmly behind a lot of the policies that President Trump is trying to put forth. And, you know, this is a huge win across the board. And as we were talking about, this is a sweep for Republicans. You cannot understate just the depression that Democrats now face. And they're also torn between what kind of candidate they should run in the midterms, what kind of issues they should run on. Instead of having a clearer map for the midterms, there's now just a whole lot of confusion for the Democratic Party.
Greg, as much as we talk about for all of the time spent talking in the media about a split in the Republican Party, that some like Trump and the Trump agenda, some others don't and are standing up to him, this seems like it is clear indication of a split in the Democratic Party, and that Ossoff couldn't find whether to be a moderate or to embrace the national, you know, furor in the Democratic Party, which is coming from the left of the party.
Yeah, there's already second guessing among Democrats I've talked to about his message, because he didn't overtly attack near the end of the campaign, at least overtly attack Donald Trump when Trump would come visit, or when Mike Pence visited. He largely refrained from attacking, just saying he doesn't want to weigh in on a national figures coming in from Washington. There's already Democrats here who said if he'd only, you know, gotten a little edgier, maybe it would have worked for him. I don't know. It didn't look like anything would have worked for him in this district with the results that we saw tonight.
Yeah. Okay. So translate that here in Washington. You said Paul Ryan is extremely happy tonight. As they have now a health care bill that we haven't really seen. We expect to see Thursday on the Senate side.
The showroom model.
Yeah, the showroom model. They may get a little wind at their back, perhaps, on the Trump.
All right. So, and here is just a little clip from this guy. I haven't heard this yet, but his concession speech. The guy was very young. He looked very smooth. His cadence, his speaking style, his delivery was almost identical with Barack Obama, which I found to be totally bizarre because he's a white guy, he's a Jewish guy. And he struck me listening to him is there was a tone, maybe it was buried in there a little bit of condescension, a condescending 30-year-old filmmaker who shows up, who doesn't live in the district, who's going to come in and kick some butt for the Democrats, and pretends to be a moderate. I think all of these things kind of worked against him, but here's a little bit of his concession.
For people here in Georgia, for people across the country.
You can hear him dropping his vowel at the end of his words. It's exactly like Obama. It's really unsettling.
And for people around the world, this small community in Georgia, which has become the epicenter of politics, sometimes to my chagrin, for months now, and it's had nothing to do with me. It never has. It's about you.
It sounds exactly like Obama. I don't think this guy realized that this actually hurt him with moderates, people in the middle.
It's about an extraordinary community at an extraordinary moment in history. The first opportunity in this country.
So, I mean, I really don't consider Obama to be that great of an orator. Every speech he ever gave sounded like every other one. Didn't really seem like that big of a deal. There is no great Obama speech that people refer to. If he had the ability to be a great speaker, he misused it. For this guy to get up and then remind everybody of Obama, I think is a disaster. And everybody has a natural style. He needs to find his style and stick to it and not mimic Obama, which, I mean, it seems... You can't argue. He sounds like a little junior Obama, which is just disgusting, really, at this point. Anyway, 6:30, Kelly O'Connell, AM, Les Cruces, AM, 1450, 523, 1450. But I hear you, you Obama voters and supporters out there. You miss your man. We'll be right back. All right, yesterday I was trying to explain why I think a plausible explanation for how people get pulled into socialism, which I believe is an irrational set of beliefs. It is a theory of how the world should be as opposed to how it is. Now, I believe that capitalism is... And you've got to kind of break these terms down. I'll do it real quickly. A capitalism is reality-based. For instance, companies that are very focused on the consumers, on their customers, tend to do a lot better. But socialism, capitalism, what are we getting at? Socialism is the basic theory that the rich steal from the poor. The rich have to pay the poor back, and you need a leadership of university people called the proletariat. The vanguard of the proletariat carries this forward in Marx's view. But it's leadership by elites, by the kind of people that probably make your blood boil when you listen to them on TV. These people get conscripted into these beliefs. I think through a process where they're if it's not in the home, if it's not bred in the bone, then they pick it up through school, especially the university system, where they go in and they exchange whatever religious beliefs they may have had for its the religion's counterfeit, which is socialism. So at the heart of socialism is wishful thinking or magical thinking. Now, I've got a couple of clips here just to try to explain what's going on, how the left could be so failed. What's the actual explanation for this? The world as it should be, not how it is really should be the highlight of socialism. The title over it. Here is a lady who is a professional counselor on this.
Malignant narcissists, and let's talk a little bit about magic thinking. So malignant narcissists and malignant borderlines engage in something that is known as magic thinking. So magic thinking is kind of a very, it's a very immature way of looking at the world, kind of like a little kid who like pulls the blanket up and says, if I can't see the monster can't see me. That's kind of magic thinking. So just because I think it should be this way, then it is going to be this way. That is magic thinking. That's not using logic in any way, shape, or form. And so remember, malignant narcissists and malignant borderlines stopped developing really around age 2. They really don't get much past age 6 as far as their emotional intelligence is concerned. They don't get past the age 6 as far as logic is concerned. They can be very cunning. Oh yeah, you bet. They can be cunning like nobody's business, but they engage in a lot of, like I said in an earlier video, they engage in a lot of fantasy. So like not reality kind of thing. And they engage in a lot of magic thinking. So just because they say something, they expect and demand that everybody acquiesce to what their version of reality is. So magic thinking is where a person kind of doesn't include logic in what they are talking about or feeling or saying, and they will rewrite history to make them look good. They will deny that they've ever said anything damaging, harmful, hurtful, et cetera, et cetera. They are the victims. Everyone else is wrong. They're the one being victimized. The world is out to get them. Paranoid ideation, yada, yada, yada.
All right. The Democratic Party, in other words. Okay. So here's a little guy from Matthew Hudson. Now, what this guy's talking about was kind of what I was getting into yesterday, which is that there's got to be, just like for any other phenomenon, there has to be an explanation for get into belief systems that are totally at odds with reality. And then they celebrate these and they fight for them. They fall in love with them. They go to war for them. This is the Democratic Party in fighting Trump is fighting for, I mean, this is a much bigger issue than Trump. It is fighting for their version of reality, and their version of reality doesn't have a great track record, but they hang on to it. Why? Because people are not inspired by science and logic as much as they're inspired by these inner beliefs, this religion. I think the best way to explain the attachment to socialism is religion, but here's Matt Hudson.
And welcome to Big Think Live. I'm Jason Gotts, and I'm here today with Matt Hudson. He's the author of The 7 Laws of Magical Thinking, How Irrational Beliefs Keep Us Happy, Healthy, and Sane. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You say in your book that we all believe in magic, luck, mind over matter, destiny, jinxes, life after death, evil, and heavenly helpers, even when we say we don't. How is that the case?
Well, magical thinking relies on very basic cognitive tendencies that we all share. So for instance, we tend to see patterns in the world and read meaning into those patterns. This is basically how we learn. And sometimes we read meaning into patterns where there is no inherent meaning. So we see faces in the clouds, or we hear messages and records played backwards. And one type of pattern that we read meaning into is seeming correlations between our things inside our heads and things outside in the world. So if a thought matches up with some event, then you see a correlation and perhaps causation. So let's say you think about something and then it happens. You might think that your thought caused that event, or maybe your thought was a premonition of the event. Or maybe something happens in your life that has some particular meaning for you. You might think that the event happened because it had meaning for you, because it was meant to improve your life somehow.
All right, so this guy goes on to talk about how these beliefs don't harm us. They help us because they help comfort us and bring meaning to our life. All right. Think about this movement in the left, this liberalism that we call it today. It was originally called socialism. Socialism as a label was ruined, so they had to get a new word, so they chose liberal because liberal sounds great, right? It's you're liberal, you're into liberality and freedom and everything. So driving this is a desire for having the world the way you want it to be. And obviously there's a huge difference between the world as you want it to be and the world as it is. And the magical thinking comes in when the liberals, when the left demand not just for themselves, but that other people acknowledge it, the PC movement, that the world is how they want it to be. You see what I'm saying? So the magical thinking comes in, you hear about socialism and you think, wow, that's great. It helps poor people. And I hate all these rich SOBs. And, you know, I'm sick of these multinational corporations ruining everything, polluting and burning up the earth. And I hear people talking about it all the time. I want to be involved in this. You know, I want to fight for justice. I want to fight for social justice for the poor and everything without any knowledge of where wealth, how wealth is created or how society actually runs. And so they buy into it and there becomes this mission creep from wanting the world to being that way to thinking that is how the world is to demanding that the world be that way. And it's kind of self brainwashing. And one of the elements that I would say would tend to support my idea, my claim is that when you listen to these people, they always talk about, in so many words, karma. Trump has done A, B, and C. He can't get away with that. You know, he's going to run to the end of his road. He's going to get thrown out. He's a terrible person. He doesn't talk to people properly. He's usurped the powers, blah, 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 whatever. This idea that there's this cloud hanging over Trump, it's a karma cloud. He's about to get rained on. And what they're doing is trying to force it, even though there doesn't appear to be a legal way forward to getting rid of him, they still claim that by being a bad person, by being a Hitler, that Trump is on the verge of getting attacked by karma, the universe. You see what I'm saying? So magic thinking. It's very dangerous. I believe it's going to destroy the Democratic Party unless they can work their way through it. And I mean, it was the same thing in the Nazis. The same thing in the USSR and China, how they wanted the world to be, they demanded that's how it was, and they ruined life for everybody. All right, 644 Kelly O'Connell 523-1450. Be right back. Okay, I've got a little bit more weather for you, and this is from the Weather Channel, the track of Cindy coming up the Gulf Coast.
Central Gulf all the way up to the Tennessee Valley is bracing for Tropical Storm Cindy. There's a look at St. George's Island, severe weather, a waterspout spotted yesterday. Now, this is typical when you have tropical systems moving in. Here's what you need to know about Tropical Storm Cindy for at least the next 48 hours. Now, the heaviest part of the rain, that's going to be to the right of the track. So there's all that tropical moisture that's being drawn up from the Gulf. That means we are looking at very heavy rain over the next couple of days, basically from the Central Gulf that push all the way up as far as Nashville. So in some cases, we're going to be talking flash flooding over the next 48 hours. And there's a look at your flash flood watch. Now, severe weather, that is also going to be in the forecast.
Tonight, from Houston all the way over to Florida,
New Orleans, Mobile, and even over to Destin, can't rule out isolated tornadoes. Here's a look at the rain and what we're going to see basically over the next 24 hours.
Now, so very heavy rains in Houston all the way over to the panhandle of Florida. Now, there's going to be a lot of flooding in the Gulf. In the Gulf states, and here is a little bit now on the heat wave and some of the temperatures.
There's a look at Sky Harbor Airport, Phoenix, Arizona. Boy, has it been hot, and that's been causing problems at the airport. Yeah, planes can't take off if temperatures are above a certain number. Yesterday, 119, that was the high in Phoenix. Imagine that, excessive heat warnings. They continue today, and this is going to last through the rest of the week. So even though we've already seen the peak of the heat, which was yesterday, it still remains hot right into the weekend. Today, we're looking at 119 for the high in Palm Springs.
118 in Phoenix. It's a little bit cooler, right? Thursday, it gets even better, down to 113, but it's going to stay hot. So we're looking at all these temperatures above the 100-degree mark right through the weekend and into next week. Now, Phoenix, you haven't beat your all-time record hottest, which, by the way, is 122, and I bet you're pretty happy about that. However, Vegas yesterday, 117, that was your high, and that tied the all-time record.
So it's not just hot here. Now, is the Democratic Party a hate group? Check it out, Limbaugh.
Let me tell you something, folks. There is an inescapable observation and conclusion. And it is this. You have to look very hard, and you have to spend a long time looking, to find a genuinely happy or content left-wing political person, whether they're an activist or not. If they're engaged in any way, shape, manner, or form of politics, they're not happy. No matter when they elect Obama, they were angrier. They got more enraged after every success they have. Nothing is ever enough. No amount of success ever makes them happy. Every success they have seems to tell them how little they've actually done and how much more there is and how deeply resentful of that they are. The bottom line is you just don't encounter happy, laughing liberals. Even their comedians are consumed by hatred. The Democrat Party has become the largest hate group in this country, and even their comedians are angry and enraged, and that suffices as comedy. I guess one of the reasons why left-wing comics have become primary sources of news for other left-wing liberals. So there's never any happiness. There never is any contentment. You don't see any real laughter. You just see a constant level of rage. And I'm telling you, it isn't healthy. You talk about sustainable. That cannot be sustained. A healthy mind and heart cannot be sustained by the degree of rage and hatred that we see on the American left today. You have to ask, why don't their successes make them happy? Look at what they've done in the area of marriage. They've totally upended it. They have succeeded in not just redefining a word that has stood for however many number of years, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of years that humans have been plodding and walking the earth. And even after they succeed with this, they get angry. They don't ever seem satisfied. It's the most amazing thing. And we're all paying the price for it, this constant rage, this constant anger. They lose elections. And it is taken as one of the most outrageous things that could happen.
So true. We'll take a break and be right back. All right, so here's a little bit of Gaffigan for you. Public restrooms.
Been to a bar. You've probably been to a filthy public restroom. We've all been in those bars where you're like, oh, wow, now I know why they serve alcohol here. And when I'm talking about the filthy bathroom, I'm talking about the men's room. I don't know about the ladies' room. I haven't been in there in like a week. But the men's room, I don't know what happens to guys when we go into a public restroom. Some anger comes out. Some of the stuff that's written on the walls. You never have a friend admit it. Like, hey, give me a second. I got to pee and draw a swastika. I'll be right back. There's guys writing things on the walls, and then there are the guys that reply. Some guy writes, this place sucks. Another guy writes, no, you suck. As if that first guy is ever going to see that. He's gathering up his friends. Well, this is what I wrote on this. Hey, wait a minute! That guy said I suck. You double suck. But all public restrooms, even when you go, even at fancy places, you ever go in the restroom and there's a bathroom attendant, aren't you always like, oh no, call me a loner, but if there's one thing I don't want anyone attending when I'm using the restroom, let alone someone sticking around to sell me a paper towel. They don't sell. They always wave it at you like, here, you don't have to tip me. You can just have bad luck the rest of your life. And you have to tip the bathroom attendant. You can't justify not tipping. You can't be like, ah, he doesn't need it. He's just working next to a toilet. You have to tip the bathroom attendant. Sometimes the bathroom attendant will have an incentive for a tip. They'll have, like, gum and cologne on a shelf. And, no, thanks on the gum. I'm sure a lot of that flavor's probably been knocked away here in your office. Where'd you get the gum? Bathroom. Yeah, some stranger and a half a tuck sold it to me. What flavor is it, bathroom? And the cologne, you know, talk about a place you don't want to pick up a scent. Well, you smell different. Bathroom again. Some guy had a jug of liquid sitting on a shelf. I just sprayed myself. Good guy. I'm moving in with him.
All right, so the Democrats lost. And there is something bigger that's going on, which is a complete loss of rationality out of the left. And so what's going to happen to the people in the Democratic Party who are left behind, who don't want to have a permanent war with Trump, who don't see every one of these politically correct standards as a mountain or a hill to die on, to quote James, the crazy James Comey, the nutcase. What's going to happen to them? Some of them have got to go to the Republican Party because the Republican Party itself has become more liberal. But others are just going to, maybe they're going to not be involved in politics anymore. How sad. It's about 6:59 here. I'll take you out with some James Booker, Amlash Cruz's AM 1450. You're listening to KOBE with Kelly O'Connell. We'll take a break in the hour and come back. All right, so I've got some news for you. Good morning, by the way, the 21st day of June. Have some New Mexico news for you. Albuquerque homeowner tapes up man for breaking into his home, and he saw the guy on camera. And here it is.
The homeowner and his neighbors catching a burglar red-handed, then taping him up until police could get there. It happened. And we have the video. News 13's Jeannie Nguyen is live in the North Valley near Indian School in Rio Grande with a look. Jeannie?
Dean, the security video shows the intruder putting on the homeowner's jacket and then raiding the fridge for a beer. That's when the homeowner showed up and brought backup with him.
Albuquerque police say this is the video of Mark Thompson breaking into a home, then making himself at home. In the security video, you can see Thompson casually walking in yesterday afternoon, putting on a jacket, wandering around, then turning on the TV. At one point, he even grabs a beer from the fridge. The homeowner got an alert that there was movement in his home. He watched Thompson on his phone and called his neighbor. Chandra Vestal lives across the street from that homeowner and didn't hesitate to help.
So I went to our garage, my husband and I, and we got two pistols. We met him in the cul-de-sac. He blocked off the entry of the cul-de-sac to make sure if he did have a vehicle, the man that was entering the home, that he wouldn't be able to escape. So as he pulled in, I passed him this 45, and then I got the other Ruger. Micah and I went into the home with two of the loaded weapons. Micah announced himself to the perpetrator saying, "I have a loaded weapon. Get down on your hands and knees." At that time, I came up behind him, and we got the individual on his hands and knees to lay down. So we got his arms and his feet duct taped, and then we picked him up, carried him out to the front yard, and waited for the police to show up.
When police showed up, they found Thompson on the ground, his hands and ankles taped.
The police had told us that's the home prior that he had broken into. He was wearing the same clothes that he had stolen from that home when he broke into Micah's house.
But Thompson tried to talk his way out of this one.
Truly said, "I'm not trying to steal anything. I just want to be friends." Now the homeowner and his neighbor said they were confident in their ability to detain Thompson because they both served in the Army. Dean, back to you.
All right, Jeannie, thank you. Now, apparently Thompson does not learn his lessons. 6 weeks ago, police say a homeowner caught him trying to break in through his back door. He held him at gunpoint with a shotgun until officers arrived. That case was dropped by the DA's office while it awaits more evidence.
All right. Interesting story. Now, the state police chief has asked the eccentric writer who put together this treasure hunt, which has killed a couple of people or seen a couple of people die looking for the treasure recently, a minister, State Police Chief Pete Casetas, said, "Get rid of it."
Pete Casetas is calling on Forrest Fenn to end his treasure hunt before someone else dies looking for it. A body was found along the Rio Grande this weekend, not far from where a Colorado pastor left his car before setting out on a treasure hunt. Last year, another Colorado man died on the same hunt. Now, Forrest Fenn says that treasure worth millions includes gold and jewels. He's placed clues about it in his books and says he intentionally made it hard to find. Now some, including Chief Casetas, are calling for Fenn to retrieve his treasure and end what Chief Casetas calls insanity. He says when money like this is involved, people make bad decisions.
It can be avoided, right? People are coming from other states and other parts of the world to find this elusive treasure that may or may not exist with very few clues. And they're underestimating New Mexico.
Chief Casetta says the two men who died are not the only treasure hunters who've gotten into trouble. He says they have rescued several others. And he says that puts rescue crews in danger. The New Mexico Search and Rescue Team has posted a survey on its Facebook page asking people if they think Fenn should call off the search.
What do you think? It puts us on the map. At a high cost, I guess. 6 killed in 25-vehicle pileup in New Mexico-Arizona line. And this is updated for yesterday. Authorities in New Mexico say 6 people died after a 25-vehicle pileup on I-10 caused by sudden blowing dust in New Mexico near the Arizona state line. And it was closed for several hours following the crash. That's a strip of highway. And closed from Lordsburg, I guess, to Wilcox, Arizona. And state police said that sudden high winds caused limited visibility from blowing dust, causing 18 commercial trucks and 7 passenger cars to crash on the westbound lanes of I-10. And there's been a couple of closures from high wind. And the state police this year, state police spokesman Carl Christensen said it's a topographical area in which the winds come through when there's nothing that can be done to prevent it, obviously. And, all right, so. Okay, let's take a little break here and come back. And I've got some more stories for you, including the claim that the guy that lost after getting $30 million in aid in Georgia, and he still lost. And they say that he misused the money, believe it or not, 523-1450, even though he acted like a junior Obama. Well, maybe like Obama, he misused the money. 713 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Be right back. So the little lost character named John Ossoff, who big eyes, skinny neck, skinny, you know, must weigh 120 pounds. John Ossoff challenged for taking massive out-of-state contributions. This is the background to this.
In your congressional district, and the enormous $8.3 million you raised in the first quarter has come largely from out-of-state donors. So is it effective for Republicans to paint you as someone who will be more beholden to national Democrats than your constituents?
Well, I grew up in this district. I grew up in this community. I've never seen political excitement at the local level like we're seeing right now. More than 10,000 Georgians have made contributions to the campaign. As I mentioned, there are thousands of volunteers, many of whom are getting involved for the first time. So I'm optimistic.
But there are still more from outside the state than inside the state, and many of them are famous. I'm looking at a list: Connie Britton, Judy Collins, Chelsea Handler, John Leguizamo, Rosie O'Donnell. They want to paint you as Coast, West Coast, liberal people supporting you, having nothing to do with where you live, where you came from. You don't think that's a problem for you?
Well, the average contribution to the campaign is $42. Nearly 200,000 people have made contributions. And
more of them from out of state than in state.
So, in like a typical smart aleck politician, thinks that he can define the conversation by refusing to answer. So anyway, this guy, now, did he got his $30 million. Can you imagine that? And he misspent it, according to MSNBC.
Casey wants to jump back in. Casey Hunt.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Joe and Mika, there's been some behind-the-scenes grumbling, too, on the part of Democrats that I was talking to last night. Ossoff spent over $8 million on one House seat, almost all on broadcast television. A lot of people think that's kind of an outdated way to try to win a race like this, and that's money that really could have been very well invested in party building and exactly what you're talking about. I was getting kind of, you know, snarky notes behind the scenes from Democratic operatives all night last night saying, oh, you know, are we going to hold out hope and wait for the Cleveland suburbs to come in, kind of recalling what it was like on 2012 to be a Democrat. I don't think it came across that this has fixed those problems.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, the TV ads, I'm sorry.
Good point.
That is so 1996.
Is like,
but it happened.
What
spend,
year are we? Nobody's
$8
watching.
Million dollars on TV, with all due respect to our network, that's just a stupid way to spend money. Barack Obama showed us that.
Yeah.
Donald Trump.
People are on
really
their phones.
You know, we were talking about it.
All right. So this guy, way out of his league, a little bit more. Democrats have been doing nothing but losing since 2010. How does that make you feel if you're a Democrat? Probably not too good.
Should be a wake-up call for the Democratic Party, who has been doing nothing but losing since 2010 in these legislative races. And at some point, you know, I heard last night Ossoff get off there saying, we've started something great. No, you lost. At some point, the time for moral victories is over, and sometimes winning is just about winning. They need to learn from this and figure out how to win next year.
Well, being condescending and acting like a smart aleck is not enough to get elected, apparently. Okay. So, let's take a little break here. I've got for you... Well, I've got a great clip from Mark Stein that'll really get you thinking. I probably got a little bit on the Catholic Church, this battle in Brazil, in which this very prominent Catholic priest is said to be dead, but having a lot of contact with Satan and being able to use Satan's power to fight global warming. It's an incredible story. We have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Hey, Aaron. What's going on?
Hey, I think last night's Republican victory is just another sign that the ideas and the philosophies and the actions that the Democrats want to take and are tried to take during Obama, everything he did, is just another repudiation of all that. I think the American people are starting to finally wake up that, you know, the press and the East Coast and the hardcore West Coast people are just out of it, and that we don't want to go down the road that they keep trying to take us down. So I was really encouraged to see that victory for the Republicans.
Very good. Anything else?
I'll do it.
Thanks. All right. Let's take a little break here. I mean, you can't argue with that because something has happened, and I think people are not as influenced by the media as they used to be. But this guy he seemed like a guy who would be a brown noser in school, who would kiss up to the teacher, a know-it-all, holier-than-thou, smarmy, Barack Obama impersonator. I mean, a lot of terrible things together, but condescending and acting like he had already won the race, which, you know, probably not a good attitude to communicate. 523-1450 AM Las Cruces 721. It's the 21st of June. It's a very hot day, so be prepared. We'll be right back. So the election was not very close at all. And so what we're going through now, one person has described as feeling like we're in a perpetual campaign. And probably not a good thing, because it gives you the sense that there's no end to this stuff. It's a campaign. So I was talking about, and I think that a Real Clear Politics had something on this. The idea that everything is politics now, politics, your position on everything is derived from politics. I'll see if I can find that. We have a call. Thanks for the call at Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is JR. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, JR. Hope you're well, and what's in your mind?
Oh, I have an observation. Isn't the left responsible for not keeping score in school activities and no competition because, you know, they don't want to hurt the other kids. And then,
yeah.
And then when you get into the heat of the moment in these political races and stuff like that, I just think, you know, they shouldn't be as mad as they are, I guess. But that's just my observation. Have a good morning, Kelly.
Thanks, JR. Good point. That is pretty funny. They don't care about winning, but they want to take Trump and bury him 1,000 miles deep, deeper than any radioactive material. So I read a story on this, the history of, I don't think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, the history of where the idea of a winnerless society came from. And it was some book written from some lady, probably from California. And it's just spawned this huge outburst. And I saw something yesterday. They're going to get rid of the ranking system in high school. They're moving away from it. Valedictorian is not going to exist anymore. So wouldn't it be better to teach children that competition is fun and it's nothing to worry about? And it doesn't have to, if you win or lose a game or a competition, it doesn't mean you're scum or you're, you know, why not bring up your kids with a sense of reality and humility? Win or lose, you keep a good face on. Win or lose, you always try your hardest. Is it really building a better world by having these type of, you know? So anyway, it is an aspirational world. It's socialism. It's the world as it should be. And if you don't adapt to it, you're a bad person. And if it doesn't work, you're not supposed to say anything. And all in the left has created a freak show out of marriage and sex. And we're not supposed to say that it's been a total failure. By the way, socialism gives birth to 1,000 stillborn monsters, but you're not supposed to point that out. All right, Mark Stein, The Left's Borderless World. This is good.
There is something appalling about being condescended to by an elite as stupid and as wrong-headed as the elites that govern the Western world over the last couple of generations have been. And I say that in a partisan way. Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, Lena Dunham and Amy Schumer, just to name other great thinkers of our time, they carry on like English Protestant absentee landlords in Irish Catholic rural Ireland a century ago. They do not live where the people they presume to govern live, and eventually people get sick of that. Dr. Arne quoted to me the Lincoln line about a house divided earlier today. And I think we're living in an interesting time in which the two factions do not even agree on what the house is. Is it a home, or is it merely some kind of cheap lodging house that is simply open up to anybody who can get here? Is it no more special than Gate 27 at Phoenix Airport? Is it just a collection of whoever happens to be standing in it at any one time? That's basically what the elite's view of America and the elite's view of nationhood is. The Ninth Circuit Court, in its infinite wisdom, now says that the President of the United States cannot target even six, putting Iran aside for the moment, but six utterly failed, dysfunctional non-states and distinguish between them, distinguish between a Somali who's got six brothers fighting for Al-Shabaab and four of them have already blown themselves to kingdom come and are enjoying their virgins in paradise. You're not allowed to distinguish between that guy and a Toronto snowbird going to his condo in Florida for 6 weeks in the winter. That is what the Ninth Circuit says. More importantly, astonishingly, it says you can't distinguish between American citizens and the 6.7 billion people on the planet who are not American citizens. That even some tribesman in the jungles of Papua New Guinea, who's out there in the jungle, he's having a great time, he's a headhunter, he's happy in the jungle, he loves shrinking heads, he has no desire to come to Florida, he's heard the head shrinking opportunities are far less, he's not in, doesn't want to do that, no desire. The Ninth Circuit Court says even you, out there in the jungle, shrinking heads in Papua, you have as much right to come to the United States as any of the 300 million Americans who are here. It's an extraordinary thing. It's an extraordinary thing because if there is no difference between, well, actually the point that Dr. Arne mentioned Aristotle and the principle of exclusion, the principle of the exclusionary middle. Anyone, I'm sure most of you here know what it is. There'll be a test afterwards. Be a fully loaded Prius for the first one who gets it. I'm going from very hazy high school memories here. But the principle of the exclusionary middle is that a thing cannot both be what it is and what it is not. And so a U.S. citizen cannot both be a U.S. citizen and an alien. And an alien cannot both be an alien and a U.S. citizen. That's Aristotle. A thing cannot be both what it is and what it is not. The Ninth Circuit Court says nuts to that. The whole world is now in the exclusionary middle. You are both an alien. The guy in the jungles of Papua New Guinea is a potential American citizen in waiting, and therefore the United States government cannot restrict his potential access. John Kerry told graduates at Northeastern this summer, you're about to graduate into a borderless world. And for those guys, it is a borderless world in a sense. They're the kind of people who'll graduate and they might take a job with Goldman Sachs in New York, and then the job will come up in Hong Kong for a couple of years, and then they might move on to Geneva, and then they'll come back to Boston, and maybe go to London for a couple of years, and the world is borderless. At that level, for them, it's a borderless world. It's Switzerland at its best, Sweden at its worst. For the masses, for the rest of the people of America and the Western world, a borderless world isn't quite so glamorous. And they have figured out that the way it's headed, and that for them, a borderless world will be less like Switzerland than Sudan. And they do not want to live in John Kerry's borderless world. But I think it's... I think it's worth following the logic of what happens. Dr. Ahn is a great constitutional scholar. He teaches the U.S. Constitution at Hillsdale. If what the Ninth Circuit says is true, that in effect the United States Constitution applies to all 7 billion people on the planet, it's essentially now like one of those bad class action suits where you can be signed up for it even though you'd never, you know, you can be living on the other side of the globe and suddenly you discover you're bound by the U.S. Constitution. If the U.S. Constitution applies to everybody, it applies to nobody. If the privileges of American citizenship apply to everybody, then they apply to nobody. Because the central act of citizenship, the central quality of citizenship, that it is about your home and where you belong, Ninth Circuit Court now says no longer matters. And the effect is to entirely negate the value of citizenship.
Interesting little blurb there. I thought you might like. Yeah, we'll take a little break for your weather. And still hot out there, of course, going to be hotter. 7:36. It is the 21st of June. 523-1450 to call in. We'll be back. Illinois is on the verge of bankruptcy. If they can declare bankruptcy, there are billions and billions of dollars in the hole. The governor says we're like a banana republic. We can't manage our money. And there are hundreds and hundreds of, basically these are funds for retirement that the state is on the hook for that it can't pay. The state currently has $130 billion in unfunded pension obligations and a backlog of unpaid bills of $13 billion. Reports have suggested that they could be the first state to attempt to declare Chapter 9 bankruptcy. Congress, the U.S. Congress, would have to get involved. And nobody here in Illinois is considering bankruptcy. First of all, it's not allowed. Second of all, it would damage the reputation of the state. It's not necessary. That's according to the House Speaker. But what are they going to do? I mean, you think that New Mexico has problems. What are they supposed to do if there are billions and billions of dollars in the hole? It is basically like, you know, Puerto Rico. All right, so they've done an investigation into the death of Seth Rich, that D.C. staffer for the DNC, and they claim that his death is not a random murder. It's got to have more to it. Little report on that here. And hold on just a second here. But this is from the WJLA, Washington, DC ABC 7 station. So here's this little clip on this.
DNC worker Seth Rich was murdered in the Bloomingdale neighborhood of DC 11 months ago, and his killer is still on the loose. Now a group of George Washington University grad students is releasing a report on their own investigation into Rich's murder. 7 on Your Side iTeam investigative reporter Scott Taylor has been following the story very closely from day one.
Police tell the I-Team that Seth Rich's murder is still being investigated as a botched robbery. The profiling project, made up of volunteer George Washington University grad students, doesn't buy it. A report just issued by the Profiling Project says the murder was more likely committed by a hired killer.
It's a possibility. A proficient killer is what we think. The fact that the killer has gotten away with it for this period of time and that it appears it was a very sanitized crime scene certainly shows some level of proficiency in killing.
The report claims Rich's death does not appear to be a random homicide or a robbery gone bad. It found an additional surveillance camera it believes the police might have missed. Let me show you the second camera that the Profiling Project is talking about. There's the first one on top of Flagler's Market. And then the second one that they're talking about. So far, D.C. police have not confirmed if any evidence was on that camera.
We hope they had this already, but we were quite surprised when we came across it during our neighborhood canvas.
The Profiling Project is funded by Republican lobbyist Jack Berkman, who filed a lawsuit against D.C. police demanding release of police records, including body cam and surveillance video, which isn't standard police policy in many open homicide cases.
Every day we get closer to a conclusion, but we have a long way to go.
And what is the conclusion?
We don't know.
The entire report is up on WJLA.com, including a statement from the spokesperson for the Rich family, who says the family hopes that the general public takes the findings at face value. Scott Taylor.
All right, so Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback who went to the Super Bowl and almost won it in 2013, is now out of football. And he's the one who kneeled, and people got upset. Instead of standing for the Pledge of Allegiance, he kneeled because Black Lives Matter or because there's not racial equality in America. Now, he's now put out there that the purpose of the police is to collect errant slaves, that says that he Facebooked, "You can't ignore your history on the right side, police officer, a badge on the left, runaway slave patrol. Always remember who they are." This guy became radicalized after he started dating a Muslim celebrity DJ in California, who happens to also be, I guess you would say, bodacious. All right, let's take a little segue here, and we'll come back and talk about the priest who's dead that has contacts with Satan and may have put out a contract on the current Pope's life. Unbelievable. 743 Kelly O'Connell. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450. We'll be back to talk about this priest who is powerful enough to rub elbows with Satan. Is called "The Secret Catholic Exorcist Cult in Brazil is Making a Deal with the Devil." It's from the Daily Beast, 6/18/17. So this is published about 3 days ago. The Vatican is looking into a group of exorcists who apparently made a pact with Satan on climate change and the death of Pope Francis. Now, Plinio Correio de Oliveira is almost as peculiar in death as he was in life. He's known for his devout followers. He was a right-winger Catholic figure. He started a group called TFP, or Tradition, Family, and Property Association. All right. In the 1960s, he went to the Vatican to protest Vatican II. And he called Vatican II a point in history as sad as the death of our Lord. Maybe a little bit of overkill there, but he died. And now in death, he is said to be in close contact with Satan. And Brazilian exorcists claim that they can channel Satan. Now, you remember the clip I played a month ago on the country star Dale Watson, who had this experience where his girlfriend died and he started reaching out and trying to get in contact with her, and he got a Ouija board and he started getting what he thought was communication from God and Jesus and his girlfriend. And then he was told to fly to Italy to go to the Pope and give him some new commandments. And it was during this time, this kind of dark night of his soul, when these voices revealed themselves to be Satan. All right, so back to Dr. Plinio. He's in contact with Satan in death. And he has so much power in the afterlife that his followers believe that he can control the temperature, the climate change, and also that he's commissioning a work to kill Pope Francis. Now, this is according to Andrea Tornielli, and he writes the Vatican Insider blog. Now, the reason they want to get rid of the Pope is because they feel like he's way too liberal, and he's a stooge, he's a puppet. He can be controlled by other people. Now, they're doing an investigation into this group, this TFP group, and it is considered, for obvious reasons. Now, there's a living prelate, priest, Dias, who has just stepped down from leadership, but he stepped down from his priestly duties, but he's still running this organization. And this guy Dias is said to be using rogue exorcism practices in which they actually communicate with the devil, possessing people rather than chasing him out. So think about that. It's almost like a zombie. They're taking people who are possessed by Satan, according to this theory, and they're using the contact with Satan to get what they want. And a Catholic sociologist who studied him, is this guy's life, Massimo Intravigna, has called this group as a sort of secret and extravagant cult, with its trinity composed of Plinio di Correo di Oliveira, his mother, Dona Lucilia, and Monsignor Claude Dias, this guy that's still alive. So, understandably, this has caused a problem for the Catholic Church, because they have a rogue exorcist or a rogue movement that is not trying to free people from the devil or from these devils. They're trying to harness the power of Satan to get work done on the earth. Isn't that bizarre? I looked for some clips on this group on YouTube, and they were all invariably in Italian or in Spanish. So, part of this there was a demand by Dr. Plinio to get people off the internet, and that he is changing the climate, and therefore the author of the climate change and the increase of heat is Satan. And Plinio is able to exercise so much influence on the devil that the devil is going to help him. Now, the devil, through this process of using human beings that are infected with demons, the devil has written that North America will disappear after a meteorite crashes into the Atlantic Ocean. No date on that, of course. And then the devil was writing and giving these messages, and they got it on video, and they carefully went through it and got the message out of it. The Vatican says that the person who is demonized, it's mine, it's mine. The Pope does whatever I want. He's stupid. He obeys me in everything. He is my glory. He is willing to do everything for me. He serves me. And that the Pope will die falling. So, understandably, the Vatican is up in arms over these folks. All right, I've got a little clip here on a town that created an industry. I think we've got enough time for it. Could we do something like this here? A little town in Tennessee that didn't have any economic life has found its way into fame and riches through bass tournaments, fishing tournaments. We can't do that, but how about something else? Check it out.
In the water of a small Tennessee town that helped revitalize its struggling economy. People look to their lake to build a tourism industry from scratch.
the bass in the lake helped bring $14 million to the town of Dayton, Tennessee in just 1 year. Dana Jacobson is here with the focus on how fishing became a lucrative lifeline. Dana, good morning.
Good morning. A small town in Tennessee was looking for ways to boost its economy. They realized the solution might actually be right in front of them in the form of a lake. All they needed to do was lure in fishermen to become a sports tourism destination. On a cool Thursday morning before sunrise, nearly 200 bass fishing boats launched from a small dock in Dayton, Tennessee. While the anglers compete to hook the biggest bass in Chickamauga Lake, the town is cashing in, so says Dennis Tumlin, the head of the county's Economic and Tourism Council.
How much money has fishing brought to your community of Dayton?
Our statistics show us that about $14 million new dollars came into town last year.
$14 million in things like food, lodging, and new tax revenue. That's a big deal for this small town of 7,200 in southeastern Tennessee.
We now have a tournament that comes in every year with 400 boats.
Mayor Gary Llewellyn was raised in Dayton.
Tell me what Dayton was like when you were growing up here.
It was just a small country town, had little country stores.
It's also a town that's been struggling since the recession. Dayton is in the heart of Ray County. It's one of the more depressed areas of Tennessee based on statistics that include poverty rate, household income, and unemployment.
I didn't know it'd be in politics. I've been a businessman all my life.
But when Mayor Llewellyn was elected 4 years ago, he had a plan to turn around Dayton's economy.
It started out with the council. I fished, and I went to them with the idea, and I said, guys, if you'll just trust me and run with me on this, fishing could really make it good for us.
Turns out, Dayton was sitting on a secret. Chickamauga Lake is more than 50 miles long and boasts some of the best bass fishing in the South.
There you go. It's awesome.
In 2014, the town began sharing their local treasure, using it to reel in big-time fishing competitions.
And we begin to think of this lake as an opportunity.
Tumlin was lured back home from his job at Coca-Cola by the opportunity to help his boyhood town.
We went after tourism, which tourism comes in many shapes, forms, and fashions. For us, it happens to be fishing. For other communities, it may be something else. It may be horseback riding. But for us, it was fishing.
You have a number even that one angler will bring into your community.
Absolutely. Industry statistics will tell you that the average angler spends $1,100 in a week, that they will spend $1,100 in your community.
And how many anglers might you have on a weekend here?
This particular tournament has 400 anglers.
I can't do that kind of math.
400. You know, it's impactful. You know, one event by itself is powerful, but we've been averaging 30 events per year for the last 3 years.
Michael Neal, second.
So think about that. Anyway, I wanted to play a little bit of that clip for you. What do we have in this area that we could develop that's like that? No, do we have a 50-mile-long lake? No, of course we don't. But what do we have here that is either very attractive or that other areas don't have? And what could we develop? I mean, it doesn't have to be a giant lake with many bass tournaments. It can be something that's unique to this area. So what is it? What do we have that we can exploit, that we can take advantage of? You know what I'm saying? Just putting it out there for you. Now, here is the guy with one arm, the bizarre Andy. Oh, and we do have a phone call, of course. Thanks for the call at Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Jason.
Hey, Jason, we're almost out of time. Give it to us.
Okay, one thing that can help our area that's unique to it, rock crawling.
Good. Anything else?
That's all I have to say, Kelly. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. All right, folks. Rock crawling. Well, let's start measuring up. Let's start counting up tomorrow the things that we have that we can. Rock crawling, I think, is a great one because we got a hell of a lot of rocks around here. Here's the guy with one arm.
I was watching Sesame Street today because I like to get all sides of the news. And I realized that show doesn't teach us anything important. Like today they were teaching us how to count cookies, and I'm like, what? Most of the time there are zero cookies. You should teach me something useful. Like how to pour scotch for dad. Or how to water down dad's scotch so he doesn't start hitting. Like, thanks, Ernie. That joke is brought to you by the letter AA. fun episode today. Oh, man. I was at a casino a couple weeks ago, and there was a guy there, and he only had one arm. I was like, whoa, you only have one arm? That's so cool. One arm, yeah. It was awesome. I hung out all day. It was great. Then he started complaining. He was like, I can't believe they let people smoke here. I can't believe they let people smoke in casinos. It's so bad for you. And I was like, dude, you only have one arm. You can't complain about the effect of second hands. All right, that's going to do it for me, guys.
All right. Very bizarre. Thanks for tuning in. Let's start counting up what we could develop in this county. Thanks, Jason. That was a good call. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell. Ciao.